All right. Well, we are in the book of Romans still. Even though it's a new year, we're still there. And as you know, Romans is solving a problem. Would you hand these out? Thank you. And then gives us a solution. And we've worked our way through the problem and then the solution. The solution was two steps, justification and then sanctification. And then Paul took a little time out to talk about the issue of Israel in chapters 9, 10, and 11. And then he came to chapter 12. And in chapter 12 through 15, we have some exhortation. And Paul begins with some general exhortation, and then he moves to some specific exhortation for the church. So we're actually right now still in chapters 12 and 13. As you recall, Paul gave that tremendous cry. He says, "Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And don't be conformed, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." So this is kind of the macro statement for the second part of the book that is to guide and govern the church. All believers of all time are to recognize the fact that we are to present our life to God. And we have seen how Paul interacts with this passage to kind of poke at us to keep our focus on the Lord. It's very easy to get our focus off of what he wants and to put it on the world, because the world looks good, it feels good, and it promises everything, and unfortunately delivers nothing in the end. So Paul says, listen, keep your sense on living for today in light of tomorrow, not looking in the past, not looking at the present situation, but realizing the future is coming. We also noticed that not everybody does this. It is not automatic. When Paul exhorts and gives an imperative and commands us to do something, that does not mean that it will always happen. It does not mean that it automatically results in people doing what he says. In fact, frequently they don't. Just look in the mirror if you want to see some people who don't do what Paul says to do, right? So these are actual imperatives and commands, and Paul wants us to do them, but he realizes that we may not always do them. Then as he continues on in the chapter, we focused on, he talks about this evil and good. He wants us to abhor what's evil, cling to what is good, and then he ends the section with, don't be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. So here's a discussion about good and evil. And he wants us to understand that we as believers, individually and corporately as a church, we need to grab onto what is good and stay away from, abhor, what is evil. We saw a little bit of the artisticness of how Paul does this. And he ended this section with, do not avenge yourself. Well, why? Because we're supposed to let God take care of the vengeance. Now, I know some of us have problems with that. We want our own revenge. Can I get an amen from the rest of you hypocrites? Okay, yeah. We like it because we think we can do it better, but we can't and we shouldn't because it's simply problematic. So the Apostle Paul has kind of given us a very interesting challenge and a very difficult challenge. And so now what we see is we come to chapter 13. He is going to talk to us about another interesting topic. It's the topic of government, of all things. Now, when you talk about government, there are all kinds of governments, right? The first government was a theocracy. God ruled. God was the government. Then we entered into tribalism, and that didn't go so well either because we had some problems. But we look and see, you can be a clan or you can have a dictatorship. We have some of those around our world. Despots are around the world. Fascism is a form of that. Critocracy, that's the grasping and the controlling of people. Autocratic, monarch, aristocracy, those are different forms. We've seen most of these all over the place. But what we're moving toward, we're moving out of something, we're moving out of a republic to a social democracy, but guess what we're headed for? What do you think this debate is really all about? It's about globalism. It's about borders being removed. It's about an EU. It's about, let's all work together and we in Brussels will tell you how much this is going to cost you. It's about America being not superior. There is no superiority. We bow to everybody else because we're common like everybody else. I'm not trying to get a political rise out of you. I'm just saying this seems to be where, this is what this whole debate has been about. It's not just Obama. It's not just Eric Holder. It's not just some of those people, which you may not like. It's about something else. It's about a bigger picture. Because remember now, who exactly is the God of this world? I know Obama thinks he is in his thinking. I mean, really, it's pathetic. But it's the devil. Get it? It's the God of this world who runs this place. And he's very interested in globalism. He doesn't mind if everything's fractured, as long as nobody worships Jesus. He's fine with that. But globalism is a way also of getting rid of what? Any specific religion. All religion becomes bad in a globalistic mindset. So there are a variety of levels and layers taking place around the world, all of which are governed and guided by the devil. And globalism is one pitch. And so we have characters like George Soros trying to topple different regimes and mess up different things. So, you know, on the one hand, we fixate maybe on certain political figures that are recent and hopefully soon to be in the past. The issue is not in the past. It's going to be in the present. It's going to stay in the present. Why? Because that's what the devil wants. He does want communism. Communism is fine too, but he wants communism. Therefore, he's going to be able to bring all of these groups together, and nobody can claim any rights. Nobody can claim any one religion is the true religion. So that's what's going on here. So we need to pray wisely about this. Well, as you realize, go ask most people, what does WASP mean? And they have no clue. That's gone. People, what? That's an animal. That's a creature. That's a stinger. That's about as close as you get. They have no clue what a WASP issue was. So we're watching a fundamental change take place, and it's not over just because Donald Trump's in play. You don't even know what's going to happen there. But I mean, it's not over just because he's there. We may think it's going to be better, and I hope it is. But the main players are still there, trying to push America into a globalistic mentality. Cindy.
Did you hear about the attack on that mentally challenged man?
Yeah, by four.
And you know, my whole thing with that is I don't care about the color of her skin. I just care that that is so atrocious and so horrible and deplorable that you can do that to a human being. And that's the way our world is going.
So, we're in chapter 13. So Paul's going to talk about government. Now, why talk about government? Well, as you remember, he gave us a general moral imperative or instruction in 12:1 and 2. Then he talks about believers and our giftedness in terms of the church, and then believers' personal character, and then believers' behavior with others in the church. And so now we get to the whole issue of behavior to the government. How are we supposed to be with the government? And you, most of you, you know what he's going to say. He's going to say submit to the government. Peter says it. Paul's going to instruct us here. He's going to tell Timothy the same thing. But now, this creates a little bit of tension for us, right? Because although we're sitting here struggling with people like an Eric Holder in the Department of Justice or Loretta Lynch, and that becomes corrupt and one wonders, or other things that we may think or know, that causes us to wonder about obeying the government. But, you know, think of it this way. What about people like him? He had a government. He led a government. The czars are gone, right? And we end up eventually with a guy like this, and a guy like this ends up doing things like this. Millions and millions of people sent off to the gulag. They're sent off to Siberia to go die. That's the governor. That's the king. That's the dictator, a form of government. That's the new god. Or this guy. Right? This is the face of evil. This is an evil man, the wicked man. He slaughtered people, millions of people. A lot of concentration camps and a whole lot of people dead. God's people, God's chosen people, not that they were always obedient people, that's for sure. But, I mean, think of the numbers here, just between Stalin and Hitler, and they weren't that far apart. Oh, yeah. She's my straight woman. She sets me up. Yeah. Mao. Millions. And it goes on and on and on. And those are only official numbers. You can imagine what the real numbers are, right? I mean, you can't imagine what that is. I mean, you could probably double it. Horrific. Now, if you're believe in evolutional theory of a society, you just say, oh yeah, this is how nature cleanses itself, right? You just get a bunch of people killed off and we move on. But as Christians, we look at this and go, wait, that's government activity. Well, Rwanda, remember Rwanda? Now, this is not good. This is just genocide. This is just atrocious. Well, yeah, but that's way over there. Yeah, but it's still on the planet. It's part of the globe. Millions, a couple, killed. Racial cleansing. We're sitting there trying to figure out, you're kidding me, two tribes? Tribalism. That's the government. So they slaughter each other. Of course, in our country, how many millions of babies actually have been killed? So if we believe life is a conception, if we believe anything close to that, and then we believe anything close to the numbers that we have, which I'm pretty sure there are a whole lot more than we have, you're talking about a whole lot of people killed, murdered, and actually tortured, because many, many babies feel pain at a certain time. So the interesting thing about that is, in one sense, can you imagine in heaven, what will these millions and millions of people look like? I don't know, so if you know, that's great. I don't know. These are going to be the innocent ones who are there. I don't know what they're going to look like. I can imagine they're going to have a special designation. But millions, and that's just in our country. I'm not saying we're the only, you know, we're the only bad people in this. No, there's all kinds of people who do this, all kinds of countries throughout history. And from my non-5-point Calvinistic perspective, I think they're all in heaven. So heaven's going to be crowded with interesting little people, perhaps for a reminder. At any rate, so here we are in Romans 13. He's going to talk about the government, and yet we know what government can do. It can be very bad, depending on the form, whether it's a despot, a dictator, fascism, whatever, rampant tribalism gone amok. And yet, here's Paul. And by the way, who's in control of the government for Paul? A Caesar. Roman Nero. Now, Nero's a bad guy, but he wasn't always a bad guy. In fact, there were some days when he did some good things. And in fact, didn't Paul appeal to Caesar? Didn't Paul use Roman governmental system? It wasn't always totally corrupt. It got that way. But it wasn't always that way, and Paul actually used the system. And in the book of Acts, you don't see the government as really the big bugaboo. You see the Jewish leadership as the guys who are always trying to kill people. Roman government's just kind of trying to keep everybody, you know, keep it together and whatever, and Paul even appeals to it. So, yes, the church grew up in a difficult situation, and it did get worse because we had different emperors come in and who slaughtered lots of Christians, and that was horrible. So here's Paul, though, going to tell us something about what he wants us to do in terms of the government. So look at chapter 13. He says, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. Now, is there any wiggle room here? Every person, so all, in fact, is that just all the church? Well, it's definitely going to be all the church, but I think it might even go beyond all the church. He may be talking about people in general are to be in submission to what he calls it, the governing authorities. The government that's in place, we are supposed to obey. We're supposed to submit. Now, I have a harder time submitting to Obama than maybe some other presidents. But imagine submitting to Hitler, or then you fill in the gap there. But that's what we're called to do. He wants us to be submissive. So he uses this word, hupotasso. It's used about wives, be submissive to your own husband. It's used in a number of different ways. Here, Paul uses it, be submissive to the governing authorities. All of them? Yeah, this is the general principle. Even a Hitler and a Nero. Is there ever a time when we're not supposed to do what Paul's saying? Could there ever be an exception to this? What do you think? Ever?
I sure hope so.
What do you do if you're in Nazi Germany and your name is Bonhoeffer? Do you join the coup to assassinate Hitler? Is that right or is it wrong? Paul says, be in submission to the governing authorities. So is it right to try to kill the leader of the governing authorities? Is it ever right to do that? What about the American Revolution? Was that right? We're glad it happened, I get that. But was it obeying what Romans 13:1 said? Doesn't look like it. So is there ever an exemption? Is there ever an exception? Is there ever a time when we don't have to do this? Is there? Was there?
Well, I have something to say about the American Revolution.
Wait, I hear a speech coming, so control it. Keep it down now.
I'll keep it short and sweet.
Okay, Arnie.
The people left Europe, not just England, but all of Europe. They came from all over to America to be free. And then some outside power comes in and tries to assert some authority. And I guess they allowed it for a while, but said enough is enough. And enough said.
Now, as Napoleon said, history is fiction agreed upon. Okay? So you can read books that articulate that, and you can read books from totally different perspectives, right? I mean, it's kind of a matter of how you see it. So, Cam.
Back to the question. Based on the book of Daniel, whenever the government commands you to do something that God forbids, you can disobey, or if it commands you to do, or forbids you from doing something that God commands, you could disobey.
Yeah, but that's Old Testament, so it doesn't count. Get us into the New Testament so we'll feel better. Anybody? Anywhere in the New Testament we get a little help here? Book of Acts? We must obey God rather than man, the apostle said. Notice, they still go to jail. It's not that civil disobedience gets you a get out of jail free card. God gave them the get out of jail free card, but they went into jail. But at that point, they said, I think based on the principle that Cam is articulating, when God says X and the government says Y, we do X and we'll suffer the consequences. So in that case, is Bonhoeffer justified in trying to kill Hitler?
No.
To save lives?
I wish he had succeeded.
Pardon me?
I wish he had succeeded.
Well, he does too, because he would have lived longer. Is it justifiable? This is what ethicists struggle with, right? And it's all nice in the nice little classroom and you write books and that's cool. But when you're in the field, in the real world, you know, they're trying to decide, are we under the right to leave the country?
Why did Jesus allow himself to be crucified by an unjust court?
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that. I would have just said all to go to hell. That would have been that. But then again, he was playing for the greater good. He saw the big picture. Maybe Paul sees the big picture.
Yeah. David had lots of time to take out Saul, and he could know rather than wanting to.
Yep, that's true. That's true, he didn't do that.
And the early church went to death in the Colosseums rather than through hell and go against the government.
So this is not a remote ancient topic. And now, why does Paul bring it up? Well, you know, there was a tax revolt going on, so maybe Paul's speaking to that. Maybe Paul's saying, hey, listen, let's not have a government problem. Our goal is to just preach the gospel. So we don't know exactly why he brought it up, but he definitely brings it up. And it's not just, you know, to them, it's to us as well. And we haven't really done a good job always of answering this question. We feel for Bonhoeffer. We're glad for the American Revolution. But how does it fit biblically? And what should we have done? And maybe there'll come a day in our own country when things like that might happen. You know, we think those would never happen under someone like a Trump. They might have happened under a Hillary, but you never know what's going to really happen. I don't think the church is out of the woods yet at all. I'm not sure we're ever going to be out of the woods. I think it's going to get worse. I don't care who's president. That's just my happy prophecy for 2017, so let's all be happy. At any rate, we're supposed to obey government. We know that. That's what Paul says. Real simple. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. Well, how come? Well, look at verse 13:1b. For there is no authority except from God. So God has the ultimate authority, and everybody else's is derived from Him. Why? Because He's sovereign and in control and can do anything He wants to do whenever He wants to do it. Wait a minute, you're saying that God puts in place Mao? He put in place Hitler? He put in place Stalin? He put in place Castro? Well, yeah, in some way and for some reason. So we're supposed to obey the government, and the reason is there's no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. They're God-ordained. Now, I don't know about you, but I have trouble with this. God-ordained Hitler? Now, Hitler and Stalin were horrible people. I think I can believe that God ordained them. You know why? They were His chosen tool to discipline His rebellious people. They're not the first people that God has chosen that are horrible people. There are people like Ashurbanipal, Nimrod. A lot of these people associated with Babylon and Iraq, and who were used by God eventually to discipline His chosen people, killing millions of them. Tiglath-Pileser, how's that for a name? These are all murdering thugs. You thought Saddam Hussein was good at it? Child's play. Barbaric. And yet God has used these people, I think, as a way of disciplining Israel. Very severe. You think that's severe? Go read part of the book of Revelation and see what happens from chapters 4 to 19. You want to see what all hell looks like on earth? That's what it looks like. And you want to see who gets harmed by it? God's very people, Israel. So, as horrible as it sounds, I think I understand why God uses certain government. He uses them to discipline His people. Now, there are a whole lot of other people who get caught up in it and killed by it, and it's horrific. But never forget, why do we have this problem? Where did this problem start? Adam and Eve. It's us. And then we had the Cain and Abel story, so we could see the first, what? Murder. Out of jealousy and anger and rage gone amok. And then it just goes on and on and on. And you know what? The kingdom of Jesus is not now. This ain't it. We're waiting for the King. And then there will be righteousness and a good government. But up to now, we don't have that. I am very happy to live in America as opposed to living in a number of other places around the world, because this government's a whole lot better than a lot of others. But this certainly isn't perfect, and we're waiting for the King to come. But until then, Paul gives us very strict instructions. He says, God established these governments. We are supposed to submit to those governments, as difficult as that sounds. Well, look at verse 3. He says, here's the principle again. For rulers are not a curse, are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. So here's the general principle. Government really shouldn't make you afraid if you're doing good. It should make you afraid if you're doing bad, because the laws are set up to stop bad people. Now, this is why it's so bad when the Department of Justice is bad. Right? That's the problem. When you don't trust the Department of Justice and you don't trust the FBI and you think they're corrupt, now you got a big problem. Because it's not supposed to be that way. They're supposed to be the guardians of truth. Well, Paul realized that the church is the pillar of truth, but God had set up government that it was supposed to be. So this is a true principle. It just doesn't always happen that way in practicality, does it? The government doesn't always do what the government is supposed to do. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear? I'm with that. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Well, here's what you do. Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God, government, or the emperor. It is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger, who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Now, this is interesting. So, if you do what the government says, you'll find praise. You'll be okay. Government's not to hurt good people. It's to get after the bad people. But when government gets corrupt, then you have a problem. When the good becomes bad and the bad says, you know, changes what they call as good, then you have trouble. When you have people speaking and you can't believe anything they say, when they say they're being transparent and you know they're not, you have a problem. When they're saying the very thing that you know is not true and they're just lying and everybody seems to be okay with it, then you have a problem. But in principle, if we do the right thing, we should be okay. But notice what Paul says. If you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. Bears the sword. What does that mean? When does a government bear the sword? When did that government bear the sword? When they execute people. When they use force. When they use what is called capital punishment, right? Capital punishment. The government has the right to inflict capital punishment. Now, not all Christians agree on this, as you can imagine. I used to work in prison fellowship with Chuck Colson, and Chuck Colson was a perfect example of a wretched human being who Jesus saved. And then he became a man that Jesus used for 25 years to have an incredible impact on thousands and thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people. So that's called a miracle, to take a guy like Colson and transform him and transform a penal system and have ministry to prisoners. Miraculous, amazing, wonderful. But Colson didn't believe in capital punishment, and I did. So there was discussions. And I kept thinking, well, the Bible says, you know, whether it's in Genesis 9 or Leviticus or Deuteronomy, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, or if someone sheds blood, that man's blood shall be shed. I mean, these principles are all there. Paul's sitting there saying the government has the right to do capital punishment. Nope, everyone's redeemable. Nobody should be executed. Okay. By the time he died, he did believe in capital punishment. He changed his view, which... good, too little, too late, but there is a time when someone forfeits the right to live in a civilized society. I don't know if those four people who were kicking and beating that mentally disturbed young person, if that crosses the threshold, or Esteban, what's his name, Santiago or something, the guy who killed five and injured eight, does he make the list? Makes my list, but I mean, you know, that's up to the government. Or you know, we all get bent out of shape when the president pardons all sorts of people. But here's the government ordained by God, and they have the right to capital punishment. And Paul says, you ought to fear. It doesn't bear the sword for naught. It can use it. But if you obey the laws, you shouldn't be in trouble. There's a guy, a theologian named Robert Culver. He puts it this way. This is his book, Toward a Biblical View of Civil Government. He says, what must not be lost sight of is that unpleasant as is the task of the jailer and the use of the whip, the cell, the noose, the guillotine, these things stand behind the stability of civilized society. And they stand there necessarily, for God has declared it so, in harmony with reality rather than with apostate sociological opinion. Government with its coercive powers is a social necessity, but one determined by the Creator, not by the statistical tables of some university social research staff. No society can successfully vote fines, imprisonment, corporal and capital punishment away permanently. The society which tries has lost touch with realities of man, his fallen and sinful state, realities of the world, and the truth of divine revelation in nature, man's conscience, and the Bible. Bottom line is, the Bible says capital punishment is okay, and if we take that away, we'll have everything going crazy. So we need the guillotine, we need the noose, we need capital punishment, both as a deterrent. And people say, well, it doesn't deter anybody. Of course it does. It deters the guy who's dead, he's deterred, and it does deter other people. It does scare them. Treating everybody with just kid gloves does not really work. Okay, the recidivism rates just go through the roof. Everybody, oh, but it's more loving to do. No, it's not. What's loving is to do what God says, and people need to learn their consequences for their actions. So I'm not a hawk. I'm not trying to kill everybody. I just have a select list. At any rate, so back to Romans 13 before we all get in trouble here. The government is supposed to be the one to take vengeance. Oh, we've seen vengeance before, haven't we? Remember earlier he says, don't take revenge, but let God avenge. Well, here he's saying it again. The government is God's way of taking vengeance on the wicked. You don't do that. Let the government do it. That's their job. God works through them. Why? Because he selected them. So we should be obedient to the government and let the government do its thing. So verses 5, he says, therefore, calling the question, he says, therefore it is necessary to be in subjection. There's our word again. Therefore, it's necessary to be in submission, subjection, not only because of wrath, because the government can use its wrath, but also for conscience sake. See, we should obey the government because God says we should, so our conscience should do what God wants. But we should also do it because of fear of wrath that comes from the government. So we should be obedient to the government. Verse 6. For because of this, you also pay taxes. Amen. Everybody moaned. Okay. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. So render to all what is due to them. Tax to whom tax is due, custom to who custom is due, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Paul, you're giving away the store here, right? Pay your taxes. Federal, state, you don't have them here, so that's nice. Local, Social Security, Obamacare, that's a tax. All this stuff goes on. Pay your taxes, pay the custom. That's like paying a toll tax. That's like paying the toll road. You gotta pay for that, gotta pay for this, gotta pay for that. And of course, we all know that tax collectors are always the most upright sorts of people, both in the first century and the 21st century. Are you kidding me? Submit and pay your taxes to such noble people as Lois Lauer? Is that her name? Lauer?
Lerner.
Remember her? Mm. That's the government. That thieving, lying person who says, I can't speak because I'll commit, I'll make myself look guilty, so I better not say anything. Unbelievable. Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to pay it. Yeah, but they're so unscrupulous. They take the taxes so they can pay the boss, and then they take 10% for themselves on top of it, and I'm the one losing out. Yeah, pay the tax. Now, so we're against tax evasion. Got that? We are against tax evasion. But we are for tax avoidance. Got any CPAs in here? Huh? Am I safe? Have I said it right? Not tax evasion, but tax avoidance, as good as it gets. Yeah. But we're supposed to pay what we're supposed to pay. So it's interesting what Paul does here. He uses you can see I'm trying to highlight, this is kind of a literary thing he's doing. With the word, the way it's written, and the sound that it makes, it's kind of a literary way of saying it. So you notice the blue words have a similarity in how they look and how they'd sound, and then the red words, similarity in how they're written and how they'd sound. So Paul is, you know, maybe he's trying to, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. He's trying to, okay, let's maybe make it have a literary lilt or tilt to it, and people might buy into it. The bottom line is, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to obey the government. We're supposed to pay our taxes. That means don't speed. Is that what that means? I struggled with this because I was driving down to Houston last week, and 5 a.m., no one's on the road, clear road, posted speed, and then there was my speed. But I didn't get caught, except God watches and sees all things. Okay, so what are some of the implications for this? They're on your piece of paper on the back side. Realize what the government is. The government's a gift of God. And we're supposed to pray for it, 1 Timothy says. And we're supposed to submit to it, 1 Peter says. And Paul says we're to recognize it's a gift of God. Respect the government for what it is. It's the agent of God. It's the agent. It's how God gets stuff done. Respond to the government for what it is. We're to obey it with joy sometimes and not with joy other times. Remember that God is the avenger and he will have his revenge. That's why chapter 12, you don't take revenge. God will take revenge, sometimes directly with spontaneously combusting people who drop dead, which is good. We could pray for more of that kind of stuff. But sometimes it's through the government getting caught when it's doing evil. Who's the Chicago guy? Voyevich? That guy? Whoever that. We all know the name, right? We hear it. Some guy. He's in jail. He finally got caught for his wickedness. Vengeance is God's, and he used the government to catch the governor, so to speak. And he doesn't always do that. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Hitler killed himself, so he finally was gone. Stalin's dead, finally gone. Raul's still around, but Fidel is gone. And you know what happens to these people when they die? They don't just die. You know where they go? They stand before the king. If they're believers at the Bema, if they're not believers at the Great White Throne, not going to be a pretty day. Yeah, they rain havoc for a year or 10 or 30 or 60. And then there's eternity. And they will give an account for what they've done. So God will have the avenge. So what's this mean for me? Well, I'm supposed to respond. I'm supposed to pay taxes, but I'm also not supposed to speed. Tax avoidance, not tax evasion. Respect our leaders and pray for them since they are ordained of God. You're kidding me. Yeah. We can disobey them when they directly ask us to do something directly against what God has directly said. We stand, though, in taking the consequences. Civil disobedience for the right reason is fine, but you will incur that civil discipline when you do that. And that's fine, too. That's what the apostles did. So respect our leaders and pray for them, because that's what Paul tells us to do in 1 Timothy 2, and Peter tells us as well, because they come from God. So how do I react? I do good and do not do evil. And God will have revenge, and the government may be his avenger. He'll take care of it. And if he doesn't, it's ultimately his choice and his problem, not mine. I may suffer consequences for it. I may not understand everything that he does in 2017, but that's okay. I walk with him, I trust him, and the government that's in place. So we have a very interesting scenario unfolding in America. Maybe it's something that's never, ever happened before. You know, George Washington said, no one can run the government without the Bible. He's right. We'll see how much of the Bible gets implemented through our government. We'll see what kind of moral principles gets implemented through our government. I think it might be better than in the past few years, but I don't think it's going to be a panacea that's going to change everything and make it just perfect. And either way, doesn't matter in the sense of what we're called to do. Pray for them, participate under the law, practice the principles that we have, and trust the Lord, and do the ministry he's given us to do. That's what Paul's saying. That's why he started with chapter 12. You have gifts. We're to be obedient and use them and serve one another. Now, in regard to the government, here's some information. But notice where he's going to go next. Owe nothing to anybody except to love. Now he's getting out of the government business. He's going to go into the body business. How to love one another. And when we get to 14 and 15, it's how to put up with one another. Right? How to put up with the weaker brother. How to put up with the person who's a vegetarian instead of a meat eater. And that has personal application in my life. But hey, it's Paul's illustration, not mine. I thought I'd start off the year being in trouble with my wife. So, you know, it's good. It's good. So at any rate, this is worthy of consideration, this government deal. Because my guess is that we all know people who are not necessarily of the same frame of mind as that we are, politically or sociologically or ethically. And the government question might just come up in terms of how we're supposed to respond. So it's worthy of thinking. And the Bible, in at least three places in the New Testament, speaks to it, let alone Jesus responding and living under it. So it's not an unimportant question.